أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم فكشف سمرة تنزيل التزمى سوى بروين ما سوى جيتان يمر بيستان ستبيتان دين بطلع سايا مبقى دامان مداتي زرقن داتي من فقا قدر بسچا في بسم الله بچا فتيتنا مقابل ايضا ويسوى بروين ما Continuing his instructions to Arjuna. This is the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called Karma Yoga. In the first section of this chapter, Krishna has explained that it is the very nature of the soul to act. He's active by nature. So there's no question of non-activity, because Arjuna had asked the question, which is better? What should I do? Why do you wish to engage me in working when you have stressed buddhi yoga, or use your intelligence and be aloof through intelligence? Like the Sthita Pragya mentioned at the end of the second chapter. So if you think that it's better to be non-attached to one's intelligence, why do you wish me to engage? Why are you ordering me to fight? They seem to be contradictory. So Krishna explains that there's no question of being inactive. To leave the battlefield doesn't mean that you'll do nothing. You'll be forced. And that's going to be described in the first verse, one of the first verses we read today. Also, you'll be forced to act, impelled by your own nature. So then Krishna explains two different levels on which one can act. One level is when one has desires, one should follow one's prescribed duties and offer something back through the process of sacrifice. And better than that, though, is when one becomes free from all material desires and still one will act. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, whether you have desires or whether you don't have desires is irrelevant, doesn't make any difference, because you still should act. And Krishna explains, act dutifully. So Krishna explains, even I, who have nothing to gain, have no desire, there's nothing exists outside of me, even I act and even I do my duty. Because if I didn't, I would be setting a terrible example and I would be the cause of so many misfortunes for the world. And in saying this, he turns around Arjuna's argument. One of his arguments for not fighting was that if I fight, I will be the cause of causing destruction of society and causing vanasankara, or unwanted progeny. And Krishna says exactly the opposite. If you don't fight, if you don't do your duty, you'll be the cause of setting such a bad example and causing vanasankara. So then, the last verse that we read yesterday was more or less a summary of this, of the third section, or the third basic instruction that Krishna gave Arjuna, was that you should fight in a completely detached way. For one who is getting his pleasure on the platform of the self, on the soul platform, and especially if he's getting his pleasure from the soul's relationship with Krishna, he will still fight, but he won't become entangled in work, and neither will he become attached to the fruit of his work. And it is only the bewilderment of the soul that thinks that he is the one doing everything. We spoke about this at length yesterday when just looking at the body. This, in one sense, there's so little that we actually do when we say, oh, I'm doing this, but there's so little that we are doing in the whole. If we take the whole act of doing something, I'm going to work today or something like that, how much of it is us going to work, and how much of it is the body composed of the three material, the modes of material nature doing things? Because in the process of going to work, we're not We're not making our legs work. We're not making the heart beat. We're not making our lungs breathe. We're not making the energy come to our body. We, in illusion, we think that we're doing these things. But really, it's only illusion, because soon as Krishna withdraws the life force, you get a little bit sick, then you realize you can't do it just by your willing, just because I think I'm going to do it. That's sometimes like, because I have an iPad, and the iPad has a touch screen, so you just touch it and you manipulate the instead of a mouse, you manipulate the way the computer acts just by touching the screen. So sometimes you actually start thinking it's your power that's doing it. So you start, so then I have another computer that doesn't have that touch screen, I start touching it and nothing happens. Because it wasn't me, it was some configuration that makes it happen on the touch screen that has nothing to do with me. And then you realize that you've been fooled, thinking it's your touch that's making it happen. Did you ever have that experience? You have an iPhone?
Prabhu.
You don't have an iPhone? What's wrong with you?
I'm not using my phone.
What were your friends saying?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. Thank you. But, so this is the illusion. Ahankara Bhamudama, bewildered by false ego. Kartaham, thinking I'm the one doing it, but there's so little of what we do. We say we're going to work, but what is our going? What is our great, or I'm doing something, I've won this, I've achieved that, but so little of it is us. We're just one minor factor in the sum total of all the factors, not minor, but one of the factors in the sum total of the factors that have to do with doing. So just looking at it from that point of view, we just see how powerful the bewildering false ego is. So therefore Krishna has concluded in 31 and 30, as we read yesterday, by saying, therefore, O Arjuna, mayi savani kamani sanyasyatma cetasa nidasir namo buddha yudhasva vigitajara. O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me. And Lord, do your work for me. Don't think that I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. So this is the summary of the third point of instruction, that you should be detached and put to the highest point. That detachment means you work for me because I am the one who's facilitating your work. If I withdraw my sanction, you cannot do anything. You cannot lift one finger. If I withdraw my permitting, upadrast anumantacha, I am the permitter. If I don't permit, there is nothing you can do. Nothing. You cannot even take one breath. So surrendering all your works unto me, why? Because it's completely natural that the small serve the great. So surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, knowing my position as the Supreme Lord, without desire for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. And it's so interesting that, and Krishna puts in, and free from lethargy, vigata jara, without becoming lethargic, because if people have no desire for profit and no claims for proprietorship, they have no reason to work. They become as lazy can be. It's the profit motive, doing something for themselves, that motivates people. It's the motive of passion. So without that, there is no reason to work unless one has knowledge who we are and who Krishna is, as if inspired by devotion, and that work will be a surrendering to Krishna, and then one can be free from lethargy. So Prabhupada explains from that in its purport. One said, Vigata Jara means without feverish mentality or lethargy, without passion or ignorance. Everyone, according to his quality and position, has a particular type of work to discharge. And all such duties may be discharged in Krishna consciousness, done as an offering to Krishna with knowledge, as described above, that will lead one to the path of liberation. So now Krishna continues. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions, who work according to what I've said, to work in a detached fashion as a surrender in knowledge, this is the result or the fruit that comes from working. Those persons who execute their duty according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. They become liberated. And then in the next verse, if we don't do what Krishna says, what will be the result? So this is first the result. As if you do what Krishna says, but if you don't do what Krishna says, but those who out of envy, so one was without envy, then we act to please Krishna, and then we'll ask right after this, what does envy have to do with it? But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them up to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. So what does envy have to do with it? An unenvious person will follow Krishna's teachings, an envious person will not. What does envy have to do with it?
Because he's envious of Krishna, he wants to do as Krishna is, he wants to be one served in.
And he doesn't want to be the one serving and doing things for the pleasure of another. We have, due to false ego, the ahankara, vamudama, we consider ourselves in the center, and we don't have a motivation to act to please Krishna if there's nothing in it for us. If I get no superficial sensual benefit, why should I act? There's no impetus. Unless one has some knowledge or better than that, bhakti, to act for Krishna's pleasure just because he is the Supreme Lord and I am his servant. That's why we should do it, because that's our constitutional, natural position. I am Krishna. That's who I am. And my constitutional dharma, eternally, is to please him. And when I try to just please myself, act as if I was the center, moving Krishna from the center in my consciousness, that's an envious mentality, and that results in us being befooled and our endeavors for perfection are ruined, they are shipwrecked. So Prabhupada, in his purport, says, a disobedient person, however great he may be, is ignorant of his own self and of the Supreme Brahman, Paramatma, and the personality of Godhead due to a vacant heart. What does a vacant heart mean? Yeah, empty. It doesn't mean empty of blood, but it means empty of anything true, which means empty of bhakti, which means that's what he's saying really. That there's no bhakti. And without bhakti, our heart is empty because we're just selfish. People won't do anything except selfish things unless they have love or bhakti. Therefore, there's no hope of affection in life for him, of life for him, because there's no bhakti. No matter whether one wants karma, jnana, or yoga, there's no. One can't get it. Mogasya karma. Moga jnana vichetasa surim raktasin. It's a demonic mentality. If one has no bhakti, no matter what one wants, one won't get it. So why don't people follow these orders? Krishna says, do this. why don't we do it? And there's going to be more on this point very soon. Even if man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes, what can repression accomplish? So it's better to act according to our modes, according to one's position, and try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus, Prabhupada says, one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's maya. It's very, very difficult to surpass the modes of material nature. Even a man of knowledge, so this is, so Prabhupada explains also the Prabhupada, academically one may be very learned, but because of his long association with material nature, he is in bondage. Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of the material entanglement because instead of surrendering to the modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, we become servants of Krishna and surrender to his desire. Therefore, without being fully Krishna in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duty. No one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. It is better to be situated in one's position and try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus, one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's maya. Can't do it, as Prabhupada says earlier, by theoretical knowledge, just making an intellectual adjustment. Oh, I know this intellectually, and therefore I can act on that platform. No, one actually has to be purified fully. One has to realize one's constitutional position as servant of Krishna. And then in this same point about how powerful the modes of material nature are, and this point's going to be brought to its conclusion and even discussed further very soon. But because remember what the issue is. The issue is that Arjuna didn't want to fight. And he was suggesting that he leave the battlefield, and he was thinking, why is Krishna ordering me to fight? I don't understand. Obviously, it's better I don't engage in this ghastly, terrible warfare that will cause so much trouble and incur so much sin. I should just retire, be a renunciant. I'd rather not gain the victory and gain the fruits. So Krishna is saying here, you're going to have to fight. Because you can't be inactive. You'll be forced by the modes of material nature. Here you are, the warriors moving. You can't just all of a sudden just go into the forest and chant japa all day or something. You can't do it. No one can do it. The modes are too strong. What can repress and accomplish? You won't be able to repress this. Your nature, it will force you to act. So therefore Krishna says, Indriyasya te raga dvesa vyavastita tayo na vasam agachet tayasya paripanchana. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their sense objects. So you may have an aversion to fighting, an attachment to not fighting, but you can't just whimsically do this. You can't just follow your attachments and aversion. You have to follow the principles that regulate, that control how you act. You can't just go by the icha dvesha simultaneity. I want to do this, I don't want to do that. So it all depends. If you regulate, if you let your wants and don't wants control everything you do, what will you do all day long? I mean, we don't even want to think about what we would do all day long if we just do it. If the mind controls everything, we probably get ourselves in quite a lot of trouble, perhaps, maybe. Because the mind is just is whimsical. So there are principles to regulate, sastic principles, to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion. Shouldn't just act whimsically and just do as your mind instructs. Because if you do that, if you don't take the sastra control and don't place yourself under higher authority, this attachment and aversion will become stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So one should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion, because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. Prabhupada explains in his purport, these propensities are to be curbed because they will be stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. As long as the material body is there, then the necessities of the material body are allowed, but under rules and regulations. And yet we should not rely under the control of such allowances. One has to follow those rules and regulations and attach to them, because practice of sense gratification under regulation may also lead one to go astray, as much as there are always the chance of an accident, even on the royal roads. So, not to be just under the control of the regulations, because, say, sometimes the question is, like about prasadam. Prabhupada uses the example here about sex enjoyment allowed in marriage, and he's making the point that one shouldn't do that. Even though there is allowance, one shouldn't unrestrictedly do that, because one will have one's consciousness controlled by that, and then one will go beyond that. One will tend to go beyond that due to the opening that the allowance gives. So then he explains that the real way to control, to get one's senses under control, is attachment to Krishna consciousness, or acting always in the loving service of Krishna. It detaches one from all kinds of sensory activities. Therefore, no one should try to be detached from Krishna consciousness at any stage of life. Because it says Krishna is saying be detached, so then we can say, oh, then I can also be detached from Krishna consciousness. As long as I'm being detached, I should be detached from everything. Because that's what the, it sounds funny, but that's what the impersonalists actually do. They take the Krishna consciousness, they worship the deities, they even chant the holy names, they read the Bhagavad Gita, they read the Bhagavatam, they even live in holy places, such as Vrindavan. But their goal is to give up these very things that they're using to elevate them. They think of these type of activities, reading the Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, living in a holy place, chanting the holy names. They think of these things as, the example that is given is like a ladder. So you want to climb a wall. The wall means to get out of the material world. So you put the ladder against the wall, and then you climb the ladder, you use the ladder. Then when you're at the top of the wall, what do? Just kick the ladder away and you climb down the other side, because its purpose has been served. So they want to renounce the things they have used that have elevated them, thinking them as not the actual purpose. They're just means. They are not the purpose of their pursuit. They think the pursuit is to get to the other side. But that's the way the impersonalist looks at it. So Prabhupada is explaining that one shouldn't renounce Krishna consciousness in this type of a mood, because for a devotee, the end of his chanting is the purpose of his chanting is not to get rid of chanting and renounce chanting, nor stop worshipping the deity. It's to develop love for Krishna and the holy names. It's to develop love for the deity, for Krishna in the form of the deity. And then, rather than becoming detached from the holy place or the holy names or the holy book, one's attachment increases tremendously. That is the goal. That is how a devotee is acting. Because we cannot be detached from everything. It is not the nature of the soul. That's what Krishna was describing that before. So the whole purpose of detachment from all kinds of sense attachment is ultimately to become situated on the platform of Krishna consciousness. So attachment to material things stands in the way of our developing love for Krishna. Just like if I'm holding the water here, and I want to, and I'm very attached to holding it, when it comes time to pick up my beads, but I'm attached to holding the cup of water, practically I can't do it, because I'm already doing something else with my hand. So similarly, if I'm attached to material things, I can't really become attached to Krishna, because the two are incompatible. Because my hands are already filled. My consciousness is already filled. My mind's already filled with this attachment. So the purpose of detachment is ultimately the attachment. The purpose of putting things down is to pick up, not that our hands remain empty. So Prabhupada says the whole purpose of attachment, of detachment from all kinds of sense attachment, is ultimately to become situated on the platform of Krishna consciousness. And the platform of Krishna consciousness means attachment to Krishna. That is what we want. We want to develop love for Krishna. Prema Pumarto Maha. So don't give up your duties. Krishna is still speaking to Arjuna, wanting to renounce his duties and just give up all activities. So it is better, Krishna is explaining in 35, to describe Sriyan Svadamo Viguna Paradamat Svarustita Sardhame Nidanam Sriya Paradamo Vayavaha. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though faultily, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. So do your own duty. It is better. So Arjuna then asks a question. And Krishna's answer to this question goes to the end of the chapter. He says, okay, we know what's right to do very often. But even though we know what the right thing is, we still do the wrong thing. Now why is this? What is one, O descendant of Vrishni, Atake no Priyuktoya? This is what Arjuna says. Priyukta means impelled. Papam Charity Purusha. Why does a person Papam Charity, why does he do papa, sinful activities? Anicham, without desiring it, against one's will. As if Baladeva Nayojita, as if made to do it, forced to do it. So Prabhupada's translation is Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? It's like this other person inside of us that is forcing us to act in improper ways, even though we, on a very conscious and strong level, we may not want to act improperly. This is text 36. So what he's asking about this amazing force. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the super soul within. So it's not Krishna who is saying you should do it. That's the super soul. But they are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse. And here is it. Kama Esha, this is Krishna's answer to the question. Kama Esha, this is Kam. Krodha Esha, this is Krodha, wrath. Rajaguna Samudbhava, born, is lust or intense desire, born Rajaguna out of the mode of passion. Mahasano, Mahapapma, it is all devouring. Mahapapma, greatly sinful. Vijayanam Ihavarinam, in the material world, this is our greatest enemy. This all powerful force of lust and anger, the motive born of the motive passion. And yet we, in this world, we're forced to play with the motive passion. So how to deal with this material world where we're forced by circumstances, by our own nature, our own desires, by the way that the culture of the world is, what it propagates. How to get free from this force, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. This is Prabhupada's translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring enemy of this world. So sometimes we don't know that we're being impelled by lust or our material desires, but then when we don't get what we want, and then we get angry, then we can tell that it's been, that we've been pushed, not by, we can tell what's been pushing us. The anger reveals it. I think one of the commentators has said that usually when you have an enemy, Chanakya Pandit describes that there are different ways you try to control your enemy. First, you speak very sweet words and flatter. Don't enrage your enemy. The second is you give a position to your enemy. There's an old mafia saying that you keep your friends close, but your enemies even closer. You bring them close so you can, so they, when they're far away, they'll cause you more trouble. And the third way is you give them gifts. First flattery, then give them position. Third, gifts. Pay them off, bribery. Make them indebted to you. And if that doesn't work, then dand, a stick. Chastise, beat. Punish, kill. But Acharya's comment that this enemy is Mahasano, Mahapap, Mahasano, a great enemy, and these won't work. You can't flatter, you can't give gifts, you can't give a position, and you can't beat it. Therefore it's all devouring, this born of the mode of passion. The Prabhupada explains in his purport. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, material creation means the modes of material nature due to his desire to enjoy, as described in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When he comes in contact, it's the mood to enjoy bhunkte prakriti janiha that puts us in contact with the material nature. So when he comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath, anger, and wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, that means the desire to enjoy the material world, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. I want to enjoy. This is born of what's in harmony with the false ego. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If, therefore, the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one could be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. So, passion should be used as described in this chapter earlier. That one should regulate oneself, one perform one's prescribed duties, one should offer sacrifices to the Lord and gradually break one's control over the mode of passion and gain knowledge and be purified in the association of devotees and Shastra and Tantra. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. And the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence. But by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities, and when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This inquiry is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, where it is said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, one should inquire into the Supreme. And the Supreme is defined in Bhagavatam as Janmadyasya Yataha Anvayaritaras Cha, or the origin of everything, is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the Supreme. If therefore lust is transformed into love for the Supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or in other words, desiring everything for Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravana, but by doing so he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath, his anger upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. This is also described by Narottama Das Thakur and Prem Bhakti Chandrika. Kama Krishnam, Kamarpanam, that one should use the kama, lust, to gain things for Krishna. But if we use these tendencies selfishly, rather than them helping us, they will, rather than passions going upwards to goodness, it will degrade us to ignorance, and then all is lost. Now Krishna gives some examples. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as an embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of lust. So smoke covering fire is not thick because the fire could still do its work. Heat and light still come. Mirror covered by dust, it's thick. When you look in it, you can't see yourself. But still, the mirror can be seen and you can clean it. But the embryo covered by the womb is very thick. Neither the child can function, nor can it be seen, or is it available. So these are three different levels or layers. It's all coverings of lust, but different manifestations. So Prabhupada explains the best process is to chant, to cleanse the mind by chanting the names of the Lord. Human life, the human form of life, from the end of the purport, is a chance for the living entity to escape the entanglements of material existence. In the human form of life, one can conquer the enemy lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. Thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. Prabhupada explains in his purport, lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is little feeling of happiness, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So you have to know your enemy. Prabhupada's purport says, the enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. So the intelligence is considered like the
watchman, like the chokidar.
The intelligence's job is to watch out for the benefit of the living entity. So when the intelligence is full of material desires, or when it has surrendered to the mind's desires and makes its plans to satisfy the mind instead of acting as the watchman for the benefit of the Lord, then one is in great difficulty. So therefore, one has to hear Bhagavad Gita, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, so that one's intelligence becomes purified and strengthened as to what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad. And then by the strength of one's intelligence, then there's more chance that one can persevere and act properly. So Prabhupada says, intelligence is the immediate next door neighbor of the super soul, spirit soul. Thus the intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and the senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, by acting according to Shastra, just what Krishna said before. Principles that regulate the senses, not to let them go in an unrestricted way, because they are stumbling blocks. So therefore, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Purport. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust. This destroys the urge for self-realization and specific knowledge of the self. Prabhupada's final paragraph in this purport, and then there's the final verse in the chapter, next to the final verse. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity. But if one is educated in Krishna consciousness from the very beginning, that natural love of God cannot deteriorate into lust. When love of God deteriorates into lust, it is very difficult to return to the normal condition. Nonetheless, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So from any stage of life or from the time of understanding its urgency, one can begin regulating the senses in Krishna consciousness, devotional service of the Lord, and turn lust into love of the lust into love of God, the highest perfectional stage of human life. 42. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So the soul is the highest. So when the soul is awake, then it can control the intelligence, and the intelligence controls the mind, and the mind controls the senses. Therefore, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, know that you are eternal. Almighty Om Dajun, once it steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Purport. This third chapter of Bhagavad Gita This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as an eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, as Arjuna was saying, but by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. By steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity, that is the sum total of this chapter. So how to do it? By steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. Gradually develop one's Krishna consciousness, be fixed in the transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. How? By steady intelligence directed towards one's pure identity. And pure identity means I'm Krishna's servant. This is who I am. So it has to become fixed in consciousness, fixed in intelligence with this. Otherwise one will be controlled by the enemy. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculation and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yoga postures can never help a man towards spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. So with your strength of intelligence, don't fall victim to sin caused by rajaguna. Keep your knowledge, do your duty, and fight. So Krishna has emphasized knowledge here, the importance of knowledge gained by spiritual intelligence. So Krishna is going to speak in the next chapter about knowledge, transcendental knowledge, the fourth chapter. Thank you. Questions or comments?
The analogy is given in 38. Why is that a white smoke in America? Does.
Yeah.
Is there any reference to that directly pertains to the three analogies pertaining to the three modes of nature?
I think, not that I know, as far as I understand. Well, it seems obvious, though.
Yeah.
Prabhupada speaks about 3 degrees of covering.
Yeah. And 3 different species.
So you're obviously more
categories of species.
You're more controlled. You have some freedom. It's more like that, isn't it? You have more freedom because if you're in the other two, you don't have very much choice.
Right.
But it's a human being who has a choice.
Right, yeah.
And that's by the fire covered up.
Yeah.
That's the idea, I think. But also, but humans is also, the human situation is careful handling of the smoke and the fire. And that's the main one, isn't it?
Say any more than that. We can look at the commentaries of Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and other acharyas and see if they mention any more parallel, but I don't know it. Any other questions or comments?
Regarding about pure identity. And then pure identity which comes Krishna service. So why he becomes pure? In Krishna service, he become pure. Why?
Why does he become pure?
Yeah.
I can ask it again.
Pure identity.
That's our pure identity.
Yeah, pure identity.
So you're saying if you're acting in your pure identity, why do you become pure?
Why it become pure? That you said that pure becomes pure is Krishna service. If you are acting in
purifying,
yeah.
because in the with our intelligence we know this is the best thing. So we try to serve Krishna. Because we know it's the best thing, because we've read in Bhagavad Gita and the devotees have spoken to us. But we also have so many other desires in our heart at the same time, born of so many years of, so many lifetimes of carrying around desires. So those don't go immediately. So the process of purifying them, purifying the mind, purifying the consciousness, by acting for Krishna's pleasure, then those gradually will go away. That's the idea. But does that answer your question? Are you sure? Because I might not have understood it properly.
Yeah.
Because you might do the right thing, but there are so many other things going on in your consciousness. So many other desires may still be there. So by doing the right thing, those desires will gradually become purified. They will leave us because material desires are compared to like fire. If you feed them, if you put fuel into the fire, what happens to the fire? It grows, yes? It gets bigger. So when we don't feed our material desires, what happens when you have a fire and don't give it any fuel? If you don't put any wood in, what happens to the fire? It stops. So the material desires will go down and the fire of our Krishna consciousness will increase. That's the basic idea. If we feed that fire. And also the taste, the sweetness of Krishna consciousness will captivate us. That's the idea. And the other, this was described earlier in the other chapter, the other taste for material, because there's some pleasure when we perform a material activity. There's some pleasure, but that pleasure doesn't satisfy us. That was also mentioned. Yeah, that's the idea. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because if you can ask more, if you like.
It's also about the last. And then you cannot attain about the taste of because of our lust. And then I ask again about the how to transform the lust to into Krishna consciousness.
Well, first is we have to regulate the senses. We can't just give into it and follow the rules and regulations. And at the same time as we're doing that, even though desires may be there on so many different levels, even though desires may be there, by experiencing the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, those desires, material desires, go away because of the higher taste, and also because we're feeding this and not feeding that. So two things are going on. So we can't, so it's a slope, so therefore it will be a gradual process. As the fire of our material desires goes down, the fire of our Krishna consciousness can go up. But if the two are burning very brightly, both of them, this one, the Krishna consciousness can't burn very brightly. If we keep the other one burning brightly, our material desires burning brightly. Follow what I mean? So slowly, is this. But not just try to make this come down and then I'll be Krishna conscious, because you'll never be able to keep this going down unless your Krishna consciousness goes up. So then it will be like this. Like in the Philippines, they have a scale, that kind of scale, like this, like in India. So when this side goes down, this side goes up. In Malaysia, they have those. In Hong Kong, they used to. Maybe not anymore. Now everything is electronic.
I still remember when we used to buy fruits.
Yeah. Put a weight.
Yeah, put weights on one side and then put fruits on the other side.
Yeah.
You know, there's a traditional one where they hold like
this. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the string, and then they put you know, weights here. And
yeah, fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, fruits and vegetables. It was a very conventional kind of
system. Still, do they have them?
Now I don't see those here.
No. Because you are here.
When I was young, I used to see all these scales.
Also in India, in Vrindavan, they used to have those probably. Maybe they still use them in the market.
Now they use all electronic scale.
So the idea being that if you weigh down this side, if this side goes down, this side goes up. So if our material desires go down, then our Krishna consciousness can go up. We can't increase our material desires and at the same time increase our Krishna consciousness. So it's slow. Maybe that was your question.
Yeah.
That how, if you can't become Krishna conscious until you have no material desires, how do you get rid of the material desires unless you become Krishna conscious? So slowly, slowly, slowly the scale goes up.
Somebody said that be afraid of chanting of Hare Krishna. Be afraid, because if you chant Hare Krishna, all your desires will be removed, will disappear. Yeah, that's true also, that they said that.
And
that's
true. Don't worry. Yeah. We tell them don't worry.
That, they said, the devotee said, but if you have desire, you have to, you have to use in Krishna consciousness. And then, if you're chanting, completely chanting Hare Krishna, and you will, all your desires will be Krishna consciousness.
Yes, nice. So it's not that you'll have no desires, but those things will seem insignificant, just like a pig.
Yeah.
A pig will like to eat terrible things, but but his desires will change, and then he won't miss those terrible things. That's the idea. Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah. Any questions?
As you mentioned, that instructed by Krishna to Arjuna that be is sticking to your profession, don't jump to your profession.
Don't do nothing.
Okay.
Don't give up your prescribed duty all of a sudden, quickly.
Previous to the Kali Yuga, they had the Varna system and their duties described for different class of people.
Yeah.
How can we understand our duties in Kali Yuga and what definitely we need to perform Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. So, I think in a simple way, whatever our life is like, they have duties attached to it. If you're a married man, and you have children, and you have parents, there are duties attached to all those identities. If you're an accountant or something like that, then there's duties attached to being an accountant. So in the varna and ashram, in your social situation and in your work situation, there are, in general, there are duties. Of course, they're not Vedically prescribed duties, but every situation has its duties. So we should do our duties in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. That's the idea. And do our duties basically as much as we practically can in the mode of goodness. And we should keep away from the type of occupations and situation that put us too much into passion and ignorance. Because if we associate too much with those type of occupations and those type of people, then what hope will we have to be, to elevate our consciousness? Our consciousness will become degraded. Does that answer your question? But yes, it was a good observation that the Vedic system doesn't really apply to us. So what is the question of prescribed duties? So Prabhupada also explains that the prescribed duties are given by the spiritual master or the sadhus or the shastra. But in general, according to our social and occupational situation, there are duties. And we should do those according to the methods described in the Bhagavad Gita. That's the basic idea. In other words, we should do them with detachment. We can't do it with detachment, and we should use the fruit for Krishna's pleasure. So if we can't do that fully, we should do it partially, something like that. Is that clear?
For example, actually, you answered half. His question was related to his question. So I was just thinking like about the prescribed duty, like I'm a cook, and now I've dropped cooking. I dropped cooking in the sense in the restaurant and all that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do another type of prescribed duty.
Yeah. Well, so much of your duties as a father are finished, but you still have some duties as a son.
Yeah, as a son. Yes.
So when those are finished too, then you can engage more.
Still,
but gradual. If you were to give up everything quickly, the point was that you should do nothing. You shouldn't do nothing, because if you do nothing, you can't do nothing. You get yourself into trouble. So that's what Arjuna was trying to do. To give up fighting, he would just go into the forest and do nothing. But if you replace in a proper way your materially prescribed duties with Krishna conscious duties, you don't fall victim to the problems when you're of doing nothing. Because you cannot do nothing. You always end up doing something. And your prescribed duties, at least you can offer to Krishna fruits and do it in a way that Krishna will be pleased. But if you're trying to do nothing, you'll end up, if you have no business, you end up with monkey business.
You go crazy.
You go crazy, and If you don't have if one doesn't have the capacity to engage himself in Krishna activities especially. If we see a lot of times old people, you know, they keep working. They want to keep working because as soon as they don't work, they'll die. There's nothing for them to do.
Bored to death.
Huh?
Bored to death.
Bored to death. They just don't know what to do with their life. No. So they keep on working even though it's ridiculous. But they don't know what to do. And if they gave it up, they'd have no purpose to live. And then they pop off. And their bodies. practically speaking, they lose the will to live.
I remember there was an example. I remember my friend's father. He's about 90. I think he lived until 95 years old. And his friends have all left. You know what he did? He fasted to death and he said, "I got no more will to live. My friends are no longer here. His wife is not around." He just fast himself to death. Is that suicide? I'm just wondering.
Yeah. But yeah, it is. But it's
suicide, huh?
Of course, if you're killing yourself in a gradual way, he had no purpose in life. If he had a set of beads in his hands, he wouldn't know what to do with them. Of the outcomes, yes.
But you do the best of your ability.
Yes, and then whatever outcomes come, you say, "This is Krishna's mercy, and let me offer him whatever I can from it." Yes. Exactly. So there, in the Vedic system, if one was following the Vedic system, there were very, very strict guidelines for every occupation. Very, very strict. Everything was regulated. But in our situation, the government tries to regulate so many things. So you act properly as best you can, and then you, whatever results come, you see that is not due to your work. Just as Krishna's mercy. Because if Krishna withdraws his sanction, nothing will come. No work, no fruit, no nothing, no strength, no intelligence. I know one young man who's also an accountant, and suddenly his back started giving him so much trouble that he couldn't work anymore. So we think, "Oh, the fruit is coming by my great strength." But if Krishna withdraws our great strength, nothing can come. We can't even work. So we have to see Krishna's hand by his grace only. So therefore, since we're existing by his grace, we should serve him. When our work is completely natural, to serve one's superiors. But that's not the way the current culture is. Now, people think that no one is superior. And my work is meant for my enjoyment, not for service, for my pleasure. So that means the heart is vacant, empty. It's all me, 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 me. And of course, it simply doesn't bring satisfaction. Everyone is longing for the happiness that loving relationships bring, but they don't have it. But we said, I don't want to go too late because it's already almost 8:30.